We are on page 427-428. We're in the middle of chapter 7 of Igeres HaKodesh. In the Hebrew, it's a natural place. It says Vihine, where the new paragraph is over there. In the English, it's on the left side, last column. Now the number, now this number is in general way. Okay, we are talking about the... We've been talking about, this ultimately ends up being an appeal letter, but unlike the other ones where he starts out saying, by the way, this is an appeal letter right at the top, here he's going to leave the appeal towards the end. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we are, in quoting a pasuk that we say in davening, in the preliminary part of davening, Ashreinu matav chalkenu umanayim garalenu, and he wants to know the difference between a chelek as opposed to a goral, a yerusha, all these different things. We talked about this at great length, and anybody can always, you can always listen to the tape, which is still on. I don't know if you can call it a tape, because it's not a tape. You can call it the recording.
The recording, yes.
Because it is online and will be as long as the internet is there.
Yes.
As long as I keep my domain name active.
Yes.
Okay. And that the godliness comes to us, and however much is appropriated, it comes down to us in a way which is suitable for us. Okay? So then, and it kind of sort of just fits. There's a big deal here. So, hine misper zeh b'derech klal. This that we're talking about before, this number of commandments. He says the body has another, the soul has 613 commandments, 613 soul parts, 613 body parts.
Right.
This is general, the word number 613. Avoderech prat, hine kol mitzvah u'mitzvah mishalechas lepratim rabim le'ein keitz v'tachlis. Every mitzvah has in it lots and lots and lots of parts.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And there's lots of stuff that you could talk about. I'm actually was quite amazed with a figure I heard, I think maybe 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. 10 years ago, maybe even, I think 10 years ago, the number of existant Torah volumes, different Torah works, was about 110,000 volumes. Wow. I'm not talking about like this chumash versus that chumash, but we're talking about this commentary and that commentary.
Different individual books.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
It's about 110,000. So I heard a statistic about 2 weeks ago. Now it's about 220.
I'm not going to run out of stuff to study.
Volumes.
Whoa.
That are existent. And in other words, meaning in the last 10 years, this was
exponential.
There was this explosion.
Wow.
That up until like 2005, there were so many books. And since 2005, we've equaled the number of books.
Wow.
So it's just like, to me, it's just totally mind blowing.
Sure.
And who's buying, who bought those 110,000 books in the last 10 years? I didn't.
Wow.
I didn't buy those 100,000 books in the last 10 years.
Not.
You know? So, but then again, it's making me wonder, is were those, can we honestly say that all 110,000 books were worth printing? Shut the tree.
We don't know.
Anyway, we don't know, because I don't know what those books were. So anyway, so then the details just keep going on, because Judaism is a living organism.
Yeah. Yes.
And therefore, our performance and how we perform things is always going to be something coming up.
Right.
You know, classic example, Hilchos Shabbos.
Yeah.
Okay? Anytime you're going to invent anything, or some kind of new concept comes up.
You got
it. Okay? How is it going to apply to Shabbos?
Right. Sure.
You know, so the corpus of law, halacha, on Shabbos is for sure an organism which is constantly growing.
Ever growing.
But you have all these things also, you know, when they come up with new technology and how to make tefillin. You know, new ways of making tefillin, of new materials of making tefillin. Could we use this material? Could we not use this material? You know, so, you know, are there ways of cutting corners, if you pardon the expression, or are there not ways of cutting corners? They make a new material that makes it possible to cut a corner, so now we have a corner that we could cut. You know, this type of stuff which is going on with the advent of all kinds of of things that they couldn't do
right.
100 years ago because they didn't have enough technology.
Right.
So as technology develops, the halacha is also going to develop.
Right.
And it'll keep on developing.
Right.
Okay, because, and that's why he says the Ein Misper, because he's going to tell me, okay, waking up in the morning, you're certain that there's just so many laws about waking up in the morning. You're going to tell me that's halachas Ein Misper? There's halachas that have no end? Well, maybe not that specific detail, but, you know, there's always what to talk about.
Sure.
I'm thinking of Hilchos Robotics when it comes to Shabbos.
Okay. What you can have your robot do for you on Shabbos?
Well, they have ones. They have machines that can follow your eyes and expressions, and figure and make a pretty good prediction of what you want. So you look at a dark up at a dark light, and it might figure out to turn the light on without you saying a word or pointing.
Yeah.
Is that are you freaking Shabbos? A goy saw you do it.
For a person who's aphasic, for example, who can't talk and just kind of gives the high sign, these are things that will have to go look into, internet, automatic internet commerce a subject. As I mentioned this last time.
Sure.
That there was a whole book just recently written.
Recently, right.
Okay, things are happening automatically. You're not doing anything,
right.
But the money's going right into your account.
But it is happening, right?
Yes.
I bet it is.
The money's going right into your account.
Sure, it is. Transactions.
You put something up on eBay, and somebody with a buy it now, and somebody buys it now on Shabbos.
On Shabbos,
and the money goes into your account. Hello.
Yeah.
Glad to
Seems
do
as if you own a store.
You would think now, wouldn't you?
The non-Jews are running.
Could be it's not so simple because if a non-Jew owns the non-Jew has to have the profit from the store being
eBay gets a
eBay doesn't get all the profit.
They get a fixed piece of the prize.
That's true. You know, so it's
they
it's
operate.
Not so simple.
Yeah, it's not simple, but hopefully there's enough of the mix to say,
So the halachas just keep growing. The hang gufe halachas prati shebechol mitzvah she ain lahem misper. Come on, because of shishim hang malchus, hang shishim sechtus, etc. It says that there were 60 worthy kingdoms. It refers to the 60 sechtus of Talmud. The alamais ain misper, hain ha halachos. And then usually it says it ain. It usually says al tikra alamais elamais. Don't read it alamais. Meaning rulings, but read it olamos, meaning worlds.
Worlds, right.
Yeah, they're the halachas. Okay, so because the word halacha itself comes, the shorter word halacha is lech. Halach means to walk, to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, this is your path and how you're going.
Going, okay.
Okay, so now that you're walking, so guess what? You're developing more and more paths.
Sure.
Are developing. That's why it says alamais, rulings, but olamais, read it worlds.
Right.
Ain misper, because he said earlier at the end of Agaris HaTshuva, which we didn't learn all that long ago, that when you do whatever mitzvah you're doing, you're providing the lever for elevating the entire creation process.
Right.
You're the rocket booster for the creation process. Okay, so Shehein Hamshachas Ratzon Elyon, and every single halacha is the will of Hashem, which is really pretty incredible, because Judaism is, as far as I know, the only religion that puts so much on the idea of practical application.
Yes.
Most religions are ethereal.
Yes.
They're theoretical.
Yes, esoteric.
Yes.
Ethereal.
We're dealing with the out there.
Right.
Okay, which is where we want our participant to get out there.
All of them are about escape.
Yeah. In Judaism, we want it to be brought down here.
Yes.
We want you to use a physical
thing
to convey godliness into this world, because every mitzvah is the will of Hashem.
Yes.
And what is it that Hashem wants is obviously a dira b'tachtonim.
Right.
He wants a dwelling place for Hashem down here. And how is it that that dwelling place is made is specifically through our actions.
Right.
And not through us trying to do a nut of an avihu and fly out of here.
Right.
But specifically taking a physical something. Okay, it's an incredible thing that all the world's religions would say that having a big old piece of meat can't be holy. You can't be holy and eat big old pieces of meat. But here you have a chalent with a big old piece of meat in it on Shabbos afternoon, and you're eating it to the covered Shabbos kodesh, so the big old piece of meat becomes a holy a vehicle for conveying holiness,
right.
And you are bringing down the will of Hashem
right.
into this world,
right?
Okay, and hopefully in a revealed way. The Kain who mamish b'nishmas ha'adam, and so too it is with a person's soul. All the souls can be drawn directly back to Adam. Okay, even though we could say now all the souls could be drawn directly back to Noah.
Right. Noah, right.
And if we're Jewish, we could say all the souls are directly drawn back to Avram. Okay, which would make us even more so. Here the emphasis is that why the answering the question, why is it that God didn't create a populated world? Instead of creating one person, make it more cost effective and help create a million people.
Why didn't create one chicken?
Yeah.
Why didn't create a lot of chickens?
Yeah, I would assume. I never really thought about it that way, but yes, that's probably true.
Chicken before the egg, of course.
Yes. You know, v'yishritzu hamayim. Yishritzu ha'aretz, it swarmed, it teemed with life.
Right.
You're right, there wasn't a chicken.
Right.
Okay, but he makes a person. He could have just, if Hashem, the same deal, it wouldn't have taken any more effort, because it didn't take any effort till now, and he could have created millions of people on the earth, and the earth would have been inhabited by lots of people right away. Okay, but, so he did, Hashem did not, so that no one can say, oh, you know, you were a descendant of one of those lesser types.
Yeah. Yeah.
My father was Adam Arishan.
Yeah.
Your father was, you know, who knows who he was, you know. So
budget, yeah.
So we all go back, it's an equalizer among people.
Indeed it is.
That we are all among the same people.
Yeah.
Okay. And the geneticists almost have it. They have it down. This is like 1993. They said that we've figured out that there were only 9 possible people that we could all been descendants from.
Uh-huh.
Now they got it down to 3.
Now they've got it down to 3.
Yeah, they figured out the mutations that it must be just like 3 people, and hopefully they'll get it down to 1.
So they get it down to Noah. Then. I thought they'd get it down to 8 because there were 8 on the table.
8?
Noah. His wife,
Noah had three sons.
Three sons and his 3 wives.
Okay, so they usually follow the paternity. That's the...
Then it'd be 5. 4.
It'd be 4. So they got it down to 9.
That gets down to 1.
They got it down to 9. And now they have it down to 3. And who knows how long it'll take. They'll get it down to 1. To say that all human beings that are alive now all stem from one individual.
Well, Ham was on the boat, too.
Hmm?
Wasn't Ham...
Yes, Ham was on the boat. He was one of the kids, but he also had Og, but Og didn't have any descendants who lived.
Right.
So we don't have to worry about him. His dad was some...
Maybe Ham's number 9 or something.
Yeah. You know, so we don't have people who can trace their lineage back to angels.
Fortunately.
Okay. We're all drawn from the same person. Generally, Adam's soul was divided into... 613, just like yours. The 613 fitting into the 613 body parts. But each one of those, if we say that our soul is a spark of Adam's soul, so that means that so far we're up to probably about close to 10 billion sparks of which we're divided to create all the people of the world.
Now we're
Now there's 7, but there haven't been much more than, you know, when you talk about since Adam until now, there's probably just over 10 billion people who ever lived. Okay. We didn't start getting like this exponential stuff until like the 80s. Mm. We went from 1 billion people, 3 billion people in the world to like 5 people to 7 people, 7 billion. You know, it'll be 12 billion in 20 years, you know, so.
No, I was doing the math.
Okay. So the number of people that have been around, so the, we're all a spark of a soul from the soul of Adam. Which happens to be one of the answers to the question that when Mashiach comes and we have a resurrection of the dead, where are we going to put everybody? All these people that have to come back into bodies. So one answer is, and following this line over here, that there are, as far as Jews go, 600,000 souls. And when Mashiach comes, there will be 600,000 Jews. And what are you going to be? You're going to be an elbow, you're going to be a kneecap, this one's going to be a toenail, because it'll all be part of, there'll be specific details of the Neshama Klalis. Oh. Okay, another opinion says that, okay, let's say that we are all a spark of some general soul, one of the 613. Okay, but I'm alive now in an individual body. As a spark.
Right.
So I'll come back later alive also as a spark in an individual body.
Right.
And I won't be incorporated. I won't be someone's, I won't be Joe's kneecap.
Right.
Okay. So but generally we can say there's 613 souls. Remachiv Varva Shasar Gidim. Adam's soul is divided into 248 limbs and 365 veins and nerves, sinews, etc. That's generally, but each part divided into innumerable little sparks of neshamas, which became the individual neshama. Shehei neshamas kol yisrael bi. Okay, that they are the souls of all of the Jewish people. Miyemais ha'avos v'hashvatim ad bias Mashiach v'ad bechlal. Going all the way back from Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Reuben, Shimon, Levi, etc., all the way until the last person born before Mashiach comes. She kuyam az mashikosav ahayim misper b'nei Yisrael kechol hayam. And that's what it says, that finally the promise that was made to Abraham, that the number of Jews will be number as the grains of the sand of the sea. That you won't be too difficult to count. Okay. Now, the interesting thing, just as an aside, this is a parenthetical. In one end, Bracha, Avram is given a blessing that your children will be so many. He's complaining, I don't have any kids. He says, don't worry, your kids are going to be so many that they'll be as numerous as the sand of the sea. Okay. And another instance, that's before Yitzchak is born. By the Akedah, what does it say? That your children will be as numerous as the stars in the sky.
Right.
So how come one is one? Actually, they may be the same number, I'm not sure. Oh, but
more stars.
You think more stars than grains of sand? Stars.
We don't know the limit of the universe.
The stars, we can figure it out, is probably about 4 trillion stars out there. Which is quite a number.
There's some galaxies that have a trillion stars.
What?
There are some big galaxies that have a trillion stars. We really don't.
Okay.
We really have no idea how big the universe is. We only have this one we can see.
Sand.
So sand has a limit.
Sand has a limit, but it's there's more
it's
than
big. There's a lot
more
of sand.
There's more than 84 trillion grains of sand around.
It's contained on Earth, and it's limited.
That's true.
So we know it's limited.
We know it's limited.
So I say stars.
I mean, I would reckon that there's probably several billion grains of sand on just every beach, you know.
Correct. So there are some. There's 100 billion galaxies. Some galaxies are large, have a trillion stars. Some are 1 billion.
The deal is both of them are. You can't count them.
Yeah. But
okay.
Yeah.
So why the paradigm? Why say sometime like sand of the sea, and sometimes say like stars?
I thought the stars were for Jews.
The Or HaChaim. No, I was just talking about Jews. Both of them are talking about Jews. Oh. The Or HaChaim writes that when the Jews are doing what Hashem wants and are in their favor, so then they're compared to stars.
Right.
When they're not doing what Hashem wants, so then they're like dirt.
Yeah, I see.
You know, we can care, but you're still a lot. There's still a lot of you. I'm still taking care of you. Yeah. But you should know, you guys, you're not even like dirt, because you can grow stuff in dirt. You can't grow anything in sand.
No.
Okay, it doesn't even hold water. So, Vihina Shufra de Yaakov Ma'ein Shufra de Adam Rishon. The statement in the Zohar that the beauty of Yaakov is similar to the beauty of Adam Rishon. What do we know about Adam Rishon? Oh, Adam Rishon was a good-looking guy, right? My grandfather, of course, he was a good-looking guy. I'm not. Do you think I'm going to be descended of some muse kite? I mean, like, hello. But what it says about Adam, we know from a story involving Reb Hamnuna and Eliyahu. If I told you the story, you can stop. That Reb Hamnuna used to learn for a long time. He learned with Eliyahu on a daily basis, the one for many years. Okay, Reb Hamnuna is an Amara living in, I would put him probably 2nd or 3rd century.
Okay.
And Eliyahu would come to him every day and would learn with him.
Right.
Time he didn't come. Next day he did come. He said, Reb Hamnuna said to Eliyahu, where were you yesterday? He said, yesterday was Rosh Chodesh. I have to go to Ma'aretz HaMachpelah. He says, what do you do at Ma'aretz HaMachpelah? Well, in the morning, I have to wake up Avraham, and I dust him off, and he daven shachris, and then I put him back down again. And then, in the afternoon, I wake up Yitzchak, because Avraham instituted shachris, Yashkem Avraham Babaker, and Yitzchak gets up, and I dust him off, and he davens mincha, because it says Vayetze Yitzchak Lasich Besada, Yitzchak went out to go daven in the field, and then he davens and I put him down, and then Yaakov, he like wake him up and dust him off, and he davens Meir. But it says Vayilam Shavamakamahu, that he laid down to rest in that place. So Reb Hamnuna said to him, wouldn't it be so much easier to just woke them all up at the same time? Well, yeah, this one's got to do it, then that one, then this one. You kill a whole day over there waiting for these guys to get done chirping. So Eliyahu said, I have no permission, because it never happened that Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov all davened on the same day. And I have no permission for that to happen, because it would be too cathartic of an experience for the world, and it would force Mashiach to come. So I have no permission to do that. So Avraham Nuna said, but wait a minute, you have Adam there. Adam's the first, why don't you wake him up? So Eliyahu, now this is Eliyahu Anavi, who had passed away 1500 years prior to this, and took his body alive with him to to heaven on a fiery chariot.
Right.
So he says, I once accidentally walked into the chamber where Adam Harishon's body is, and I was blinded by the light that was emanating from his heel. That is talking about a body. It's not even talking about an Adam. It's talking about a body. Okay? And this was so bright that even Eliyahu, who was not enclosed in a body, couldn't even go there. Because when you think about it, who was Adam? Adam is referred to as Yetzer Kapov Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's the handwork of Hashem. Hashem put whatever energy into directly the creation of Adam's body. But you can say, but wait a minute, Adam mucked things up. Okay, true. But Adam lived 930 years and did one thing wrong. It's a big thing, okay, fair enough. But as far as his entire life goes, you know, what would you say? The first day that you were born, let's see, the first couple hours you were born, you messed things up. And then after that, you lived a perfect life. What grade would you give him? You give him pretty high marks.
Pretty decent marks, yeah.
Okay. So Adam, but Adam still did have that black spot.
Sure.
He still had that spot there. And that spot was not corrected until Yaakov. That's why it says, the Zohar says, that the beauty of Adam HaRishon is the beauty of Yaakov. Because through this pure, what was the deal? Is there's a certain purification process that has to go on. Adam brought schmutz into the world. That's what he did. And he was even told by Hashem, that if you'll clean up the schmutz, I'll let you back into the garden. And he told all of the leaders of the generations up until Noach, and including Noach, that if you'll clean up the schmutz, I'll let people back into the garden. Once Noach came out of the flood, Hashem says, deal's off. Yeah. You blew it. You haven't been able to do it till now. You're not going to do it from now either. So the world was always missing something. Comes along Avraham. About Avraham, it says in the Zohar again, that midas, a chesed of Atzilus, Hashem's attribute, the divine attribute of kindness, complained to Hashem, while Avraham is alive, I am unemployed. I have nothing to do. What's a divine attribute? What's a divine attribute of kindness supposed to do? It's supposed to direct people to life. And here, the attribute of a chesed was saying, Avraham's doing that. He said, I don't have anything to do. Okay, but from Avraham came Yishmael. And Yishmael is anything but purity and light.
Yes.
Okay, and we can say that was necessary because this way he jettisoned some of the impurities. Then comes Yitzchak. Okay, and we don't know a whole lot about what Yitzchak did, other than the fact that by the time that from ever he was, from the time he was like 40, or even a little before, he was blind. And therefore, what did he do? Is he sat in his tent the whole day. What we refer to nowadays in Kabbalah terms is being Misyachid Yechudim, unifying the name of Hashem. So when Yitzchak did is he took over by Avraham, what did he have to do? So he had to bring people in and teach them all about Hashem. Yitzchak didn't go running around preparing calves and whatnot
for
his guests.
Right.
But still, he was this a vehicle for Elokus. He brought down godliness into the world. Okay, then come, but he had an Esav.
Right.
And Esav was worse than Yishmael.
Yeah.
Okay. Then comes along Yaakov. Okay, Yaakov is called a Tam, which means simple, without complication. Okay, noch, and the Yiddish expressions would be anchachmas, no schemes, no complications, no nothing, straight. And his work a whole time was, his main thing was his family. Because we see that what? He had 12 kids and 12 shvatim. Each of the 12 kids became the leader of a shevet. And each of the 12 children had their names engraved on the breastplate, which is part of the Kohen Gadol,
right,
as he worked in the Beis HaMikdash.
Right.
So you see that by Yaakov there was no Yishmael or no Esav.
Right.
Okay, he had rectified all that needed to be rectified, because from him came 12 tribes. Was the world a perfect place yet? Well, no.
Not yet.
Not at all. But as far as the rectification of persona, Yaakov, you might say, corrected or filled in the gap or purified the shortcomings of Adam HaRishon. Not Avraham, Adam HaRishon. Okay, because of what he was able to do and how he was able to do it, so that which was a major defect in the world was corrected during Yaakov's time.
Taken care of, yeah.
And just as it is that Adam's neshama, Adam's soul, included and was comprised of all the sparks of all the neshamas that did live, are living, and will be living, so too also Yaakov, same deal, except more specific. His soul is an incorporation of all the sparks of all the Jews that are going to ever live, that ever lived, are living, or will live. Okay? Shetakin Chayi Adam Arishin. Skip something. Shetakin Chayi Adam Arishin. Vahaisa Nishmasa Gamkin Kalul Mikol Nishan Shabi Yisrael Mo'il Mat Eilim. Vahaya Merkava Letayr Shulamailish. And Yaakov proved to be, whereas Avraham, it says that the attribute of kindness of Atzilus complained, I got nothing to do.
Right.
So Yaakov is analogous of Tiferes, which Tiferes is the perfect balance of kindness and severity. Avraham was Mr. Giver, and has had a Yishmael. Yitzchak was Mr. Gevura, restraint, and therefore from this restraint, the byproduct was an Esav.
Right.
Yaakov was a Merkava, a vehicle for conveying divine Tiferes. Beauty, however you want to call it, truth, mercy.
Emes, right.
Yeah, Emes, this type of thing. And with that, that's the, if you're saying that,
that's huge.
With Tiferes, it basically is a conveyance of what the way things are supposed to be.
Right.
Because Midas Emes is an expression, Emes, truth, is an expression of Tiferes. Moshekosav al demusa kisei demus kemara odem, as it says in Yecheskel's vision, that the animal had four faces. Each animal, there are four animals, each one had four faces. The face of a lion was on the right side, and the face of the ox was on the left side, and in between was the face of an eagle, the face of a man. Okay, which man's face was on the Markava? But you never thought about that one before. Okay, was it a generic face? Just some two eyes, nose, and a mouth? No. It was, it says there, the way it says over there, the al demus hakisei demus kemara adam. Okay, it was a person who had the image of Adam. Who had the image? It didn't say it has Adam's face on it. It says the likeness of Adam. Whose face was the likeness of Adam? Yaakov.
It would be Yaakov, yeah.
Yaakov's face is that which appears on the Markava. It says this is now before Yisrael, and when it says Zeis, it means Teira. What is it when we talk about Midas Emes, Midas Teferis, that distinguishes the Jewish people? That we can say, there's a lot of people out there. There were a lot of people in the world when Yaakov was around. Why is it that Yaakov specifically was the one who we say was the corrector of Adam? Because Yaakov learned in the tents of Shem and Aver. He spent his whole time learning. Even before Matan Torah, Yaakov is sitting and studying. And we know that there were shortcomings to the Torah before it was given. Okay, it wasn't really ours, we weren't really doing it, we were talking about it, we were learning about it, we weren't doing the Torah. But that was enough. The fact that Yaakov was engaged in what he was engaged in, was able to do whatever he was able to do. Because it does talk in the Zohar about of Yaakov and his putting on tefillin. It talked about when he was engaged in animal husbandry and he was trying to get spotted sheep and speckled sheep.
Right.
So he peeled the sticks.
Right.
And that peeling of sticks accomplished what we accomplished when we put on tefillin.
Yeah.
Because he peeled them in stripe form. And right. Then he threw away the sticks when he was done because they didn't have any holes. But for the time being that he was peeling the sticks,
right,
would be exactly the same as when we are wearing tefillin. The only difference is that when we do it, it sticks around and has a permanent effect. When Adam, when Yaakov did it, it stuck around for as long as he was doing it.
Correct.
So he was affecting the world somehow. And indeed, you could say it was like he was planting the seeds that we should be able to do it. He was laying the groundwork.
Right.
That our tefillin should be able to have such a desirous effect was because of what he was able to do with his quote-unquote tefillin. So therefore we say that Adam couldn't do that. Adam didn't do that. Adam didn't do mitzvahs. He had his six. Okay? So he wasn't up to the level of what Yaakov was able to accomplish because Yaakov had the Torah behind him. Shehaisa kalula mislavshis b'neshamas Yisrael saba hakalula mikol haneshamas, that what Yaakov was able to accomplish was enclosed in his soul, which then therefore became the grandfather of all Jews afterwards. That Yaakov's doing, his accomplishments, become an inherited trait within us. Okay, there's certain things that Jews have naturally inherited. Yisrael ma'aminim b'nei ma'aminim. Jews believe in Hashem and are the children of people who believe in Hashem. It's like sort of like in our DNA. We believe in Hashem. Jews are merciful and easily embarrassed and like to do good for other people. Okay, about those last three, it says if someone's missing those, you could check out their lineage to see if they're really Jewish. So these people that they caught in Israel who did a retribution murder on a little kid, so you could check out to see if they're really Jewish or not, because that's such an such a non-Jewish thing to do. Okay, check out, see if their mothers are really Jewish, their grandma, their mother's mother's mother is Jewish. Somebody was something's wrong over there. V'zeu v'yikra l'keel elokei Yisrael. And this is what he called Hashem, Hashem, the God of Israel. Okay, generally when we refer to Hashem, it's just like the God of Israel. Okay, but what about Avram and Yaakov? We say in our davening, elokei Avram, elokei Yitzchak, elokei Yaakov. We don't even say Yisrael.
Right.
But the expression which is colloquial to the world at large is the God of Israel.
Yes.
Okay, why? Kael is Lashon Hamshacha. The name of Hashem, Kael, implies drawing down godliness, because the word El means to, as in going towards something. Where are you going to?
Right.
Which means you're not here, you're going over there. So the name Kael implies drawing down godliness to here.
Uh-huh.
Yeah? It is a ray of infiniteness of Hashem, which is revealed from the hidden to the revealed, which was revealed now in the soul of Yaakov. Okay, so Yaakov just did the thing with the sticks and he threw away the sticks afterwards. So what did that mean? That means he didn't do anything. What it meant was is that what he wasn't able to do was to draw it down into the physical thing. He still drew down. It didn't affect the physical thing at all.
That's what I'm saying. He wasn't able to bring it down into any kind of permanent fashion.
It wasn't even temporary in the sticks. The sticks never achieved a level of holiness.
Uh-huh.
He did. Godliness down to him. K'moshe kasev, Kael Hashem v'yair lanu. Okay, it says Kael is Hashem. This aspect of drawing down v'yair lanu, who shines down to us. V'acharav kol yishurei lev. And then all the straight of heart. Ha'iskim b'teiru mitzvahs. Those people who are engaged in Torah and mitzvahs nowadays, draw down Elikus so that their souls become charged and illuminated with godliness. So that what happens now is unlike Yaakov, where it was superficial, with us it's drawn down to pneumius. When a person puts on tefillin, wear your tefillin, you don't eat your tefillin.
Right.
They're not on the inside of your body. Baruch Hashem, we don't have to shove tefillin into our ears.
That's good.
To get them inside our body. They're sitting right on the outside.
Yes.
But there's a story involving Reb Zusha of Anapoli and Reb Eliyahu Melech of Lizhansk, two brothers. Mm. What would they do? They would travel around. And then when it would stop in a place and there was some kind of situation that warranted correcting, so they would engage in play acting. So rather than coming up and telling somebody, hey, listen, buddy, you're doing something wrong. Because normally when you do that, if two people that you don't know come up to you and say, oh, by the way, you're doing something wrong.
Yeah.
You're going to tell them, there's the door, don't let it hit you on the backside. Okay, so that wasn't going to work. So what would they do? They would play act. One of them would complain that such and such is a situation that I did, and it's so terrible that I did this, and it's going ongoing, it's terrible, horrible, horrible, horrible. And the other one, they would take turns. The other one would say, well, this is the way that you rectify it. Okay, so they come into an end, an inn, and Reb Zusha started crying that he has his bar mitzvah tefillin. He's had the tefillin he's had since his bar mitzvah. And he's already putting them on for many decades. And now he just recently had them checked for the first time, and they were l'chadchil apostle. And he's never put on to kosher tefillin in his life. Okay, so the innkeeper hears this, and he says, you're supposed to get your tefillin checked? I didn't know that. I've been putting my tefillin on for decades. So he tells him, Elimelech tells Zusha, open up his tefillin, let's see what's doing. So they opened up his tefillin, and indeed they were pusil in such a way that they had never, ever been kosher. And he said, we're sorry, but, you know, basically the news was, is you've never put on tefillin in your life.
Not yet.
So this was so horrible for this person. That here he is, he's a Yiras Shemayim.
Right,
wakes up every morning, he's got a zillion things to do, right. And he's making sure that the first thing he's doing, he's putting on the tefillin, you should pardon the expression, he's doing it religiously.
Yes.
And here he's been doing? He's been doing nothing.
Right.
He was besides himself.
Sure. Of course he was.
Reb Elimelech told Reb Zusha that he should write a set of parchments for this man with the intention that when he puts them on, it should make up for the times that he didn't have on tefillin.
Wow.
Okay, so they did this. And unfortunately, he's a simple guy. These are supercharged tefillin. He died a couple months after. Okay, I'll tell you why I'm telling this story. And it says that Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev got a hold of these tefillin. And somehow, when Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev passed away, they came to Rabbi Yisrael of Ruzhin. There was no relationship between them, but Rabbi Yisrael of Ruzhin was a grandson of the Mizrachim Magid.
Okay.
And somehow these tefillin, with Levi Yitzchak Berdichev's tefillin, came to Yisrael of Ruzhin.
Okay.
And one day he went away, and somebody borrowed that pair of tefillin once.
Right.
When Rabbi Yisrael of Ruzhin came back, and he put on the tefillin, he said, something's wrong. And he sent them to the Sofer, and the parchments were blank. Somehow, something, because of the person who put them on before, wasn't the right person to put them on, so...
Whoa.
Blank. Okay? So now, what am I telling this? Is because the tefillin go on the outside of your head.
Right.
But having tefillin on your head affects your brain.
Right.
It says in the Zohar, Ein Daima, Karkafta Shalai Maniach Tefillin, LeKarkafta Shemaniach Tefillin. There, you cannot compare a person who put on tefillin even one time to a person who never put on tefillin.
Uh-huh.
The whole composition of their brain totally and completely changes, even with one time. This was one of the simple answers that when the Rebbe was back in 1967, an Israel student, you know, we make a tefillin campaign.
Right, right.
So obviously there's these knockers to it. People who didn't think of it first were against it.
Right.
And they said all kinds of things. How could you put tefillin on the street with somebody? It's a dirty place. And how could you do it? They didn't wash Negelwasser. They have dirty hands. Right. And then when they're putting it on, who knows what they're thinking about? Right. All this kind of stuff. And then when they get done, it could be the guy's never going to put on tefillin ever again. Right. So what did you accomplish? So the last question that Rebbe said is no answer, is no question. The answer is simple. A person puts on tefillin once is no longer in the category of karkafta delomaniyach tefillin. He's no longer the person in the category of a person who never put on tefillin.
Right.
Okay, so it does have...
Changes the world.
Yeah, it says that a person who puts on tefillin will think clearer than a person who doesn't put on tefillin. Mm-hmm. I cannot validate that because since I put on tefillin every day, I don't know if I'm thinking clearer on a day that I don't put on tefillin than a day that I do put on tefillin, since I do put on tefillin every day.
Right.
Okay, and I don't remember back to from the time when I was 17 and a half before I started putting on tefillin, if I had my a foggier perception on life because I had a 17 and a half year old perception on life,
correct.
Which every 17 and a half year old is foggy.
Doesn't have a clue.
So the So the mitzvah that you're doing with your body, even though the mitzvah is the thing you're doing it with, is outside of your body,
right?
But you're doing it with your neshama.
Yes.
And your neshama gets that charge. And indeed, the entire neshama is the first to benefit from it. Mm. And from there, it's not limited. It goes out to the rest of the world and the rest of creation. Uzman giloy ze b'yeser seis v'yeser oiz v'harasim b'maychem v'libam hu b'shas ha'tfilu k'mosh v'rmachem achar. And that really, what's the best time for this revelation of Hashem is davening. Because what are you doing when you're davening? You're trying to get closer to Hashem.
You're trying to connect.
And when you feel that there is a connection, voila, it happens. I'd like to go to the end of the page, but it's not going to happen. So, unfortunately, we're going to stop on page 230. First word on the reward is Kemosh Kevur Machamacher. So we'll probably finish the chapter next time and start chapter 8. We'll probably do the first half, which is also broken into two parts, on page 430, 429, to be continued.